I'm also now going to speak about Shirley Bankston. Where's Shirley? Shirley? Can you raise your hand? Oh, higher than that? Thank you. Shirley has volunteered at Inner Church for 13 years. She works 6 hours a week. She answers phones from people needing services that the successful program provides. Requests for food, clothes, household items such as linens and dishes, those are all typical things that Shirley handles when people call. Inner Church helps out with money for rent, XL Energy, and water bills as well if they have the funds available. Shirley began working at Inner Church because she had a background in office work and always liked that kind of work. She began working after her husband died because she wanted to keep useful and busy and not just sit around, like she said. She already had many friends who were already volunteering at Inner Church, so it was easy to join in. She says the fellowship is one of the most rewarding parts of her volunteer efforts because she's made friendships with many wonderful people, even Presbyterians. Sometimes it can be disappointing when Inner Church can't help out someone in need, but the satisfaction in helping and making a difference in Aurora is wonderful. Shirley is one of several Burns folks who have been active with Inner Church. So if those other people can stand if I say your name. Sandy Tenney, Alice Martin, Garnett McGill, Mary Mueller. Is there anyone else that I... Oh, stand up if we didn't get you on the list and you're helping at Inner Church. And Jim Berry. We have a lot of people at Burns that are supporting that program. Oops. Now I'd like to ask Kathy Motan to talk.
On the first Monday of each month, I can be found downtown on 16th and Grant Street. Why? Well, here is my story. I'd always had a curiosity, for lack of any other word, about the homeless population. And, of course, like many of us, I didn't do anything about it. I was scared to death. Well, at work, I had a little Catholic friend. He was only 23 at the time. And he used to go to Catholic Charities and help with their soup kitchen at the time. And I thought, well, my goodness sakes, if he can do it, I can do it too. After spending 11 years with our homeless brothers and sisters, I personally am a much richer person because of it. And it was such a powerful experience the first time I went down. I went home and I typed some notes of what I felt, and I brought those today to share with you. They're very personal, and I didn't write them for anyone other than myself. So this is from my heart. And this was written back in 1995. Wednesday, May 24th. Will I ever be the same? Can I ever be the same? As I walked down the stairs of Grant Avenue United Methodist Church at 4:30, we were met by tables already filled by men. In the 40 years of my life, I was much younger then, I probably would have walked by and not given any time of the day to any of them. Who were these men? How did their lot in life bring them to a church so that they could have a hot meal in their stomachs that day? And why so many men? Ooh, I had no answer. There were a few single women and a few couples and a few families, but by and large, they were men. My senses saw unbathed, filthy bodies and smelled foul odors, but my heart said, these are human beings just like me, and God values them as much as he values me. As every last morsel of food was consumed by all, I was very conscious of some of the words spoken. Great food. Thank you for this nice meal. Are you married? Where did your home end up after the flooding? Yes, the ratio of condensation of materials that has a force on Mars is equivalent to... Can we take some food home for our sick child? Ooh, I care about you, man. I heard conversations that could have been taken place anywhere, at any diner or restaurant in any part of the country. I heard much as I served my cherry pie and peach cobbler, as I served coffee, as I served the fruit punch, and in doing so, as I served God. Kathy, our leader, could be very gruff. At times she was barking orders to us like a general, but she had compassion oozing out of every ounce of her body. She informed us that they were starting to serve this meal a little different than they had in the past, and we weren't going to just be in the kitchen making up plates and handing them out to the clients anymore. We were going to be in the room with them. Well, I hadn't had the experience before, so I didn't know it was a change. She advised us to go around and pour coffee and chat and just talk to the people. Well, I was a little reluctant at first for the challenge, but I forged ahead and made eye contact and talked to many various peoples that I never would have otherwise. There was a badly burned man. I only saw his burnt scalp as his head was lowered while eating. I was almost afraid to look at him, as he only had stubs for fingers, and I was afraid of what his face might look like when he looked up. But when I asked him if he wanted some coffee, he looked at me in these beautiful blue eyes. I can still see them today. Incredible eyes, gentle eyes, perhaps Jesus-like eyes. A family of three asked me if they could take some extra food home for some sick children who are unable to come. Who knows whether that was an accurate story, but for that matter, who cares? If they were hungry and there was food, why not let them have it? They were told by the kitchen staff, no, but I said I'd check into it, and I was told that any food that was left over at the end of the meal could be picked up and brought home at 7. They were pleased to hear that. I talked to a gentleman by the name of Ray for quite some time, and he was very interested in my marital status. Did I have kids? What was my name? He explained that I will always remember who he was by the sun and the rays that shined. He didn't take his sunglasses off during his entire meal, and I was thinking, is he hiding something? Was he protecting something about himself? Being the only server wearing a dress probably had something to do with why I was asked if I would marry him that evening. Ray was also the one who stumbled when he tried to get up, and because he was stumbling, I thought that he was getting ready to pick a fight with another man who was in his face. I thought they were arguing about something, and being a female, I thought I would go over to intercede and that things would cool down. But boy, was I all wrong. They not only were not fighting each other, they were giving each other a heartfelt hug, and I thought they were getting ready to box, and I'm going, oh my goodness sakes, look at where my thoughts have led me. There were two gentlemen who had a small table all by themselves. They were absolute geniuses, and I listened to their conversation in awe. I had never heard people speak on such an intellectual matter about cosmic forces in the universe and all this stuff. I couldn't even tell you the words that were being said, but I knew that there was no way that I would be able to talk intelligently to these two. So what was it that their life had taken them to that they were down at Grant Avenue looking for a meal? It just bothered me so. A conversation was held in the back of the room between what appeared to be three old acquaintances who declined anything I happened to be offering. They seemed to be catching up on old times as any other group of three persons would if they were having some sort of reunion. They were cleaner than some of the folks, yet I knew that they were probably just as homeless as the rest. The gray hair on one lady was probably deceiving, as I don't believe she was any older than myself, but because of her lifestyle, she had aged prematurely. She was very sweet and was in shock that I would wash her table. She said, well, at the shelter, they give us bleach and a towel, and we have to clean our own tables. She was absolutely tickled that somebody would clean her spot for her. And it seemed like such a small thing. I felt that there is some unwritten respect that these individuals have for each other. I can only surmise that each of them must intuitively know that the others have gone through things that the rest of us will never experience firsthand. Yet, they somehow acknowledge it in each other. As we were cleaning up, someone came out of the kitchen to give the sole remaining diner some extra food, which he quickly put in his empty mayonnaise jar that he had brought with him in his filthy backpack. Could the rest of us think about being so excited about having a cold spaghetti meal out of a mayonnaise jar for some future meal? He was very excited. I asked him if I could put anything in his beverage container, and he said it was full. Where do you suppose he'll be sleeping tonight? I was so excited to see the Native American girl come back earlier who was in need of some food, and she was so excited that there was food left. And she returned promptly and took the food back to either her own family or to those that weren't able to attend with her. There were so many things that were etched in my mind that very first experience that I just couldn't erase them from my mind. As I was leaving the church, I used the women's bathroom, and when I got ready to turn off the lights, I saw a handwritten sign that said, "Free showers at," and then wherever it would be. And I thought, when's the last time we were in need of a free shower? It just was so very humbling to me. When I got home that night, although I fell asleep, after a couple hours of sleep, I was rudely awakened. Nothing was pounding on the window. The kids were not yelling for something. I think it was God that wanted me to awaken. I searched and searched for guidance. "Please use me as you see fit." I prayed and I prayed, and eventually searched for sleep, went to sleep laying in a puddle of my own tears. I couldn't get all the voices, the sounds, the smells, and the sights out of my heart more than anything else. 200 meals were served that night at Grants Avenue. We have moved twice since then, and we are serving 600 meals the first Monday of each month. If you look around at us here, that's probably six times the number of people that are in these pews this morning. And it's by the end of the month, it's closer to 900 meals that are served. And that is a lot of people. The homeless have so much to offer us that the general public could learn from them instead of vice versa. They all have a story to share on how they landed at a place in their lives that they are in need of daily food sustenance. So it's hard for me to understand when people call them lazy. They have a much harder and more time-filled life than many of us would ever understand unless we spent time with them. Even though it is every person for themselves on the mean streets of survival, I see more human compassion with the homeless amongst themselves than I do with any other group of people that I run across. Maybe it's because they know the hard life that each other has gone through to get where they are. This may come as a shock to anyone here, but I am on huggable terms with many of our homeless brothers and sisters, and it dawned on me that often they only get a poke from a policeman or a meal served with plastic hands. And I thought, what a better way to embrace our brothers and sisters than a hug. And some of them look forward to it. I don't know how many they get. And I have one hilarious story I have to share. I had lost my job a couple years ago that I had worked for 11 years. Of course, knowing me, I don't wear shoes. I hadn't worn shoes for those 11 years. And I was tripping about what I was going to do if I was offered a job in a real place that required shoes. And all my homeless buddies had all these suggestions. And I absolutely loved the one that Stan came up with. When I was offered a job, I said, "What am I going to do? I can't wear shoes." And he said, "Just tell them they're invisible." And I thought, yay. It didn't work, though. I do wear shoes at work. But anyway, last week would have been when I would go down to feed the homeless, and I was in Minnesota visiting my mother. So I close with my personal thoughts that all of God's children deserve to be treated with dignity and respect, and this is my very small piece. piece of how I think that this can be done. And because I was gone last week, I cannot think of anything better I wish to be doing on August 7th. It can't come soon enough. Thank you.
And now we'll hear from Alan Doctor.
I have been doing volunteer work for Metro Denver Bright Beginnings, which is a program that Governor Roy Romer put into effect. And what he wanted was for every young child, baby, little person in Colorado to have a good beginning in life. So what this program does is for women that are prenatal or soon to have a baby or have had a baby, I go out and I bring them a warm welcome bag, and within that warm welcome bag is all kinds of resource information on things in the community and places they can call to get help. It provides picture books and information on how to raise your children, you know, little things on caring for them and shaken baby syndrome, that type of thing. And then additionally, we have a moving on bag that we provide when they're close to 2 years old that is about language. And this is to help them develop their speech and language skills. So, needless to say, I really do that because I'm all about children, and I enjoy providing some type of resource information to families to help them in difficult times or just when they need information or they want to know where to go. I've also been doing some volunteer work for a nursing home, and what I do there is I help with activities, and a lot of these folks, they can't get up and move on their own. And so these activities are all about getting them out of their room, and whether it's making a picture frame or playing bingo or whatever, that's what we do. And I'll tell you, I was amazed when I started doing it and how much need there was there. There's not very many people. In fact, it was myself and one other person. We were the only volunteers in the nursing home in the weeks that I was doing it. And I will be going back to that soon. And then I'm also a volunteer for the ASPCA with the Legislative Action Committee, and that involves being willing to take action and write letters and whatever to our legislative council concerning animal rights or any type of legislation going on, whether it's on the national level or the local level. And anybody can do that. You can even do it just from your typewriter. You don't have to have a computer to do it. So also, we had, where I work, a volunteer fair a little while ago, and I have a listing of all the agencies that were there and their phone numbers and what have you, and we're going to have some back at the sound system at the end of the service if you want to grab one. There's a lot of information. There's just a lot of organizations that if you could just be willing to take a phone call or answer the phone or stuff envelopes, that type of stuff. This doesn't take a lot of computer skills, but there's so many organizations in need that even if one were to take 1 or 2 hours a month, it would make a big difference. Thank you.
As you've probably guessed from what a lot of the speakers have said, there's a phenomenon about serving. The more we serve, the more we receive. Serving increases our emotional receiving. Albert Schweitzer said, "I don't know what your destiny will be, but one thing I know, the only ones among you who will be really happy are those who have sought and found how to serve." We need to ask ourselves, is our serving action-oriented, or is it merely public image-oriented? The aim of Christian life is not to look good, but to do good. It's our serving of service to Christ, or are we doing it to serve our own self-satisfaction? Without a commitment to a cause higher than ourselves, we can't stay in there for a long haul. Our main power source is outside of ourselves. And so looking to God gives us the inspiration to continue to be servers for a long time. Orrin Hutchinson Jr., who was a past editor of the Church School Publications for the United Methodist Church, gives us this challenge. My hope for the church is that it will learn anew the central focus of servanthood. That means we are called to be servants of the Word and the world. We are first to lay hold upon the Word for our mandate, our marching orders, and our spiritual sustenance, and our ultimate hope. Then we are to move out to be servants to the world of human need and spiritual ignorance, bringing what we have learned as it influences word and deed. I want to thank everybody who contributed to today's service with their experiences.